Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Frozen Biscuit Podcast. I'm Ray Leo, and behind the glass, we have Anthony, who is our intern here at Chop Sports. And this is our inaugural episode, so welcome aboard, and a couple of things that we're going to be covering today. But first, I guess I should start with myself. I am somebody who has been watching, playing, or viewing hockey for the last almost 40 years. I started playing when I was 2, played all the way up through high school, kind of stopped playing after that, did some beer league stuff after that, and we'll continue to watch the game and watch the game grow and go in the right direction. But it's something that I love, something that I've watched very closely, and it's been my number one sport for almost the last 40 years. So I bring a little bit of a different view to it, and something that hopefully we can all enjoy. First things first, I wanted to start off with Willie O'Ree, somebody who broke the color barrier in hockey, and it was something at the time that was completely unheard of. It was something that people weren't really sure how to take and really sure how to go and how to understand it. What Willie did for the game was phenomenal. It changed the perception of people and African-Americans in hockey. It changed, in some ways, that the game was played, and it changed the altogether overall acceptability into the game, because I think at that point it was always played a certain way and played with a certain style. And I think Willie is somebody that came in and changed that. To see his number retired in Boston last night was something that was pretty special. And then to see around the league that other teams were honoring him as well, too, tells you everything that you need to know. In a lot of respects, he did a lot of what Jackie Robinson did for baseball as to what Willie O'Ree did for hockey. So to see his number retired and to see that go up in Boston was pretty special. Of course, them going out and laying an egg last night was quite the scene to watch, but I think this is one of those nights where the game was kind of second to what was going on pregame. I think there was a lot of suspense around it, and it went off really, really well. Willie is somebody that played the game the right way. Willie is somebody that did things in a way that some players now just won't grasp. I think Willie had a couple of quotes last night where he was talking about how much he respected the game and how much he loved the game. And nothing could be more true than what he was talking about in regards to that. I think the one thing that he didn't mention last night was that if you think you can, and this is a direct quote from him, if you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you're right. And that's kind of the speaks to the power of the culture of visibility, as well as the importance of the personal perseverance that Willie had. You know, I think that was something that he really believed in, and I think that was something that was really important to him, where he fought through everything throughout his career, because for somebody like him, that was not an easy career, to say the least. I think he had far more challenges than most people had throughout their career. Even just making it, it's such a difficult sport. So the importance of Willie certainly will not be forgotten, and I thought that was kind of something that was important to cover. Moving along, I wanted to discuss the NHL players going to the Olympics. Now, we all know that this isn't going to happen. You know, listen, it's a crappy situation. Nobody wants to see. You know, this is something that these players look forward to. In fact, if you remember, I believe it was the last Olympics, there was a collective bargaining agreement that was up, and the players had said that, or some of the players had said that, they'll sit out the entire year if they weren't able to go to the Olympics. Well, that turned out not to be the case, and they ended up going. But I think this is a unique situation, simply for the fact that if anybody gets COVID while they're in China, they're liable to just be there for 4 to 6 weeks. Many of these teams are smack in the middle of a playoff race. And to make it even more difficult, they don't even know how many, technically how many points they are behind somebody, because they're not going to know how many games that they've played at that point, because if games getting postponed or getting canceled or maybe not being able to play because of COVID. There's a million different reasons why, and I think that's kind of the initial thought here. I don't know where... I don't know where the players really have any room in this, and which is sad, because, and I know many people don't like him, but Brad Marchand actually was right when he was quoted as saying, "I know at the end of the day they don't care about the Olympics. Noting that players work their entire lives for the chance to play in those games. They don't make money on it, and ultimately it's a business, and we're an asset. Let's just call a spade." I mean, he's not wrong, folks. You know, there's no money to be made here. The players could potentially be stuck in China for 4 to 6 weeks when really they're getting paid by the teams to play here. So I don't really know, you know, how the league goes about this. I think that they've made their decision and that this is what they're going to do. And honestly, I think it's the right one. I don't think that you could be jeopardizing anybody to be gone for that long, especially in a season where there's so many uncertainties, where nobody really knows what's going to happen. And if this is going to continue with all these postponed games or these canceled games, and when are they going to be made up? Because let's think about this for a second. A lot of these games they plan to make up through this Olympic break, which I believe is 3 weeks. But a lot of these buildings, you go to an MSG or a Staples Center, or even, let's say, down in Tampa or Miami, where the Panthers play. It's these buildings are booked, folks. These buildings have other concerts or other attractions coming in where they're not going to be able to play every night. And then now you have to match up two teams that potentially may not have the same day off, or may have to play in another city because that's the only time that they can play. There's a lot that plays into this. And the NHL is in a little bit of trouble here, because they're going to have to do one of two things. Either they're going to have to expand the season, which is not something that they want to do, because now you're going to go into potentially June, maybe even early July, and then start back up again in September. Or they're going to have to, I hate to say it, they might have to even consider shortening the playoffs, which is not really on the table. So let's discuss what some of the options are here. And Anthony, if you want to jump in, certainly I'd love to have that conversation too. Where do you see the league going, and what do you see potentially being a resolution here?
So when I think you look at terms of how this season's going to end, I don't see any way that they shorten the playoff games whatsoever. Playoffs, it's going to be best of seven. That's the way it's played. That's the way it'll always be. I think the only way this happens is maybe they shorten the regular season, kind of like, what, I think 56 games last season? I mean, maybe not 82.
It would be interesting if you saw another situation where they had a couple years ago where they had the play-in games, because those playoffs were probably some of the highest-rated playoffs that they had. Was it 2 years ago when they ended up shortening the season because of COVID, and it got a little crazy, and it was fun to watch. So something like that is certainly on the table. I think that the league has to really kind of come to some kind of a decision here on this, because it's something that's gonna come around kind of quickly, and you know, making quick and swift decisions is not Gary Bettman's specialty.
Definitely not.
You know, continually year after year and issue after issue, he's always had, he's kind of just kind of waited and played the wait and see approach. It's not going to work here. And I think that's something that, you know, the NHL really needs to address, and they need to address it quickly, especially now that they've announced that asymptomatic players are no longer going to be tested, only players where anybody's showing symptoms or crossing the border. I think that that's something that's going to change the game here, because what they're going to do now, they're not going to be able to get through a lot of these games. So now you're not going to see as many postponed games or as many canceled games. But you still have, I think the number is somewhere in the 70s on number of canceled games or postponed games. How are you going to fit those 70 games in 3 weeks? Is it possible? Maybe. But again, you've got a ton of different boundaries, a ton of different obstacles to overcome here. And I think that's going to be the issue that they're facing. When can they use these buildings? How often can they use these buildings? You know, you might even see some day games here during that Olympic break on a Wednesday, just to get these games in. I think that's certainly on the table as well too. Where they go from here, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because I think that there's not that many options, and not really too many answers as well too. So I think they're gonna really have to focus on that. The other thing that I wanted to discuss too is this last man in nonsense for the All-Star game. Let's call it what it is. The All-Star game is a glorified exhibition game. No question about it. Players were voted in by the fans and by the fans and their peers as well. But the last man in was voted in by the fans. Now, taking a look at the last man in, two of them were Nazem Kadri, who is fourth in the points in the league, and the other one was Steven Stamkos. So how are you going to tell me those two guys were not already in the All-Star game and they were being voted in? The others were Mika Zibanejad and Brian Rust. Jake Guentzel. All right, I'll give you Jake Guentzel, because he is somebody that maybe kind of flew under the radar last year. But Mika's got 24 goals already this year. Stamkos is the face of the league, or one of the faces of the league. And Nazem Kadri's got almost 40-something points. Guys, come on. How are these guys last man in? I mean, let's talk about, you know, how are they not getting in? You're looking at guys that are being left out of this game. And I understand it's only an exhibition game, but it does a lot for some of these guys that could be potentially or younger guys, and it does a lot for their confidence as well, too. You know, I know Nathan MacKinnon was not a big fan of the All-Star game, and specifically Nazem Kadri getting in. Being quoted as saying it's silly. He said, I don't think every team should send a guy. It's an All-Star game, not a participation game. But he's having a career year, Nazem Kadri. And to much the chagrin of the Toronto fans. But to have him not be voted in on a initial voting, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And this voting system has been shown time and time again that it's outdated and it needs some work. And again, this goes back to the league not focusing on things in a timely manner. And this, again, goes back to the commissioner. I believe it goes back to the commissioner. I think this is something that has been at the forefront for quite a while. And I think this is something that should have been changed years ago. My personal opinion is that this becomes an all-fan vote. Or it goes 50-50 with players voting and the fans voting. With maybe some more weight being put on with the players. I think that there's definitely different options to this. But come on, guys. I mean, not having a guy who's having a career year not get in because either the fans don't know who he is, or they're just voting for the superstars, or it's because maybe some of the players don't like him. Whatever the reason is, it's nonsense. and there's a there's got to be some kind of a change for it and some kind of a substitution to the way that things are currently done, because it's obviously not working. When you have a guy that's got 45 points or 46 points, whatever it is that he has, and you've got one of the faces of the league being the last man in, your system is definitely not working. I think that this is something that really needs to be worked on, something that really needs to be to be looked at, and a change needs to come with it. So, you know, that's something that I would definitely, if I'm the league, definitely take a look at, because you clearly some of your league superstars are not happy with the way things have gone. And if we've seen anything over the years, it's that the league responds to the superstars more than it does the fans. So that's something that I would definitely take a look at if I'm the league, and hopefully have a resolution to, because it's obviously not working. Which brings me to, speaking of the face of the league, Alexander Ovechkin. I mean, this guy is 36 years old. He had another goal last night. Is there any stopping this guy? I mean, he's one of the pure, if not the purest goal scorer we've ever seen. I've never seen anything like it in my life. I know that when he first got drafted, it was Sid or Ovi, and it was such a debate between not only my friends and I, but also throughout the NHL as well, too. And, you know, I know that we've watched him over the years just set up from his office on the left wing and just score goal after goal after goal after goal. It's crazy. I mean, I don't know that it's only, I think it's only a matter of time before he breaks this record. Anthony, I don't know if you have anything yet you kind of wanted to add to that, but
yeah. So, I mean, when it comes to Sid and Ovi, it's always been, you know, with every draft, it's always a battle between, you know, two guys or two people.
Sure.
I know that they did go in different drafts, but their names were always associated with each other. And, you know, Crosby got off to, like, hot start in his career. He got his Stanley Cups. And, you know, a lot of that success just kind of went against Ovi. A lot of players a lot of fans were just like, you know, Ovi's just the goals first guy. He's not the leadership guy, but he can't win a cup because, you know, names attached to Ovi. But, you know, I think once Ovi got his cup, you know, he finally got the monkey off his back. He got the championship he's been dying to get, got out of the second round. And, you know, he's gotten better with time. He's like a fine wine, you know.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And
if I'm not mistaken, I think he's this is the best start to his career. Like, mm-hmm. Like,
at 36 years old.
At 36. Like, this guy, like, I mean, he doesn't even need to break Gretzky's record to prove to me, and I think many hockey fans, that he definitely is the best goal scorer in this game, for sure.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And you know, what's funny about this whole situation is that, you know, everybody always says or bases their opinion on a player or his success in the league based on cups. Honestly, this is a situation where I think that you kind of maybe look past that a little bit. I think this is a situation where when you look at the whole body of it, I'm not going to sit here and say that Ovechkin was a better player than Crosby, but if you gave me the option of having the NHL all-time goals lead and one cup, or being the player that Crosby was and having three cups, it's a tough argument.
Definitely a tough argument, for sure.
You know, it's a tough argument to have. Part of me wants to say to take the goal scoring lead, because I don't want to say that's a record that I don't think will ever be broken, because we're coming into much more of an offensive league than we've ever seen. But I don't think you're ever going to see a goal scorer like that again, and I think that's kind of that's kind of the point here, is that he really has changed the way the game is played, and he's done it from the same spot, from the same place, for 18, 19 years. and still can't stop him.
Not only that, like Ovi as a player and the person has matured from
tenfold.
His time.
Yeah,
like we all know that image of Ovi just standing still, like the controller disconnected. we've all seen that. It always came with like the territory because he was the goal scorer and everything. But I think, you know, we've seen him grow. Like he plays both sides of the puck now, and he's definitely a better leader. He's captained his team to a cup. So sure, he's doesn't have as many cups as Sid, but you know, got to give credit where credit's due.
Sure, of course. There's no question about it. And you know, when they won that cup, I don't think I've ever seen anybody more ecstatic than he was when he won that cup. Oh, and, yeah. And they won that cup. If I remember correctly, they won that cup in Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? So, yeah. I can only imagine what the rest of that night was like. But, you know, and, you know, somebody that's following quickly in his footsteps and maybe, you know, it's a little bit of a different position, but is playing absolutely lights out right now is Cale Makar. What Cale Makar is doing right now to the rest of this league as a defenseman is insane. I mean, there's Cale Makar and then there's everybody else on defense. You know, he's got what, 17 goals, 18 goals. And he's just been absolutely killing it for the Avalanche. And the Avalanche are an absolute machine. You know, I had the opportunity to watch them the other night and they just are killing it. Like they, you know, they happened to be down 2-0, and the next thing I knew, was 5-2, and it wasn't even more than 10 minutes later. So this team can score a lot of goals and can score a lot of goals quickly. And Cale Makar is part of the reason why, because he is somebody that can change a game in an absolute instant. And then I think
with Cale, like if you've ever seen just the way he skates, like
so natural,
it's not only but his technique, his crossovers, like the way he can turn and pivot on a dime, it's a game changer. And he did get selected high in I believe the 2017 draft, but still kind of like a hidden gem. He went a little late.
So there's a funny story about it, and I'll pull it up and I'll talk about it where. I forget who the GM of the Flyers was at the time, but
I heard about this.
Yeah,
it was Hextall.
It was Hextall. Yeah. And they had the second overall pick, and that was the Devils had the first overall pick, and they took Nico Hischier. Mm-hmm. Now, if you remember coming into that draft, it was all about Nolan Patrick.
Yeah,
and Nolan Patrick then Nolan Patrick kind of fell out of favor, and the Devils ended up taking Nico Hischier, while the Flyers had the second pick. And Hextall was the GM of the Flyers at the time. And they were picking second. And they ended up taking Nolan Patrick. But Bobby Clark, who happened to be working for the Flyers at the time, came out recently and had said that there was nobody in that room other than Ron Hextall that wanted Nolan Patrick, that they all wanted Cale Makar. And they ended up taking Nolan Patrick. And Nolan Patrick is now buried somewhere in the depth chart for the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, he's on the Knights now.
Yeah. And Cale Makar is absolutely just tearing it apart right now. And, I have a lot of respect for the Rangers and what they've done with Adam Fox. But there's not even comparing the two. At this point in time right now, there's no comparing the two. I think Cale Makar is a far better player than when Adam Fox is. Adam Fox is still a very good player, but if you want to compare the two, I don't think there's much.
I don't know if it's as much of a landslide, but, I mean, when it comes to the Fox and Makar, Makar is definitely the better player, but it's not by a landslide means, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, and maybe I stretched that a little bit, but I still think that right now 9 out of 10 teams, if they had a redraft, were taking Cale Makar over Adam Fox. But again, you know, I guess it's dependent on needs and kind of what you're looking for. You're looking for a puck moving defenseman. Are you looking for a stay at home defenseman? Really, what are you looking for? But and both teams fit what their teams do very well. So I can't say that, you know, that either one was the wrong choice. I just think that Cale Makar is a better player right now than Adam Fox is. However, I do think Adam Fox has that potential to reach that level, which, you know, would be fun to see a local guy, you know, a local team doing well, because it's really been a while since we've seen, I guess you have Panarin over on the Rangers, but we haven't really had a huge superstar do that, and I think that would be something to kind of have in this town. Would be really, really cool to have. And I know Devils fans are hoping that Jack Hughes becomes that guy. Certainly he's
on his way.
Yeah, him getting hurt this year didn't help.
I was at that game. I saw him
dislocated his shoulder.
Oh, it was terrible.
It was only maybe, three games in at that point?
He only played
four periods of hockey.
It's crazy.
And, you know, you could just see that he was a different player. I think that there's a growth curve. Everyone forgets, this kid's only 20 years old. It's got a lot of growth, and you're starting to see that this year.
Jack Hughes is, I think he's on his way. He's definitely making a lot of progression. The problem is, when it comes to Jack Hughes, we have been so spoiled with the past drafts. We had generational talents like Matthews.
Oh, yeah.
We had generational talent in McDavid. So all these drafts following those two players are held to that standard. You don't,
right? And just being that number one overall pick doesn't help either. You know,
that's,
I think,
true too. Yeah.
You know, I think there's certainly something to that as well too. Listen, you know what? Anytime you're the first overall pick in the NHL draft, you're going to be scrutinized. You're going to be held to a higher level. A lot of times, you know, the guys don't remember who the second guy picked is, but they'll always remember who the first guy picked was.
That's true.
You know, and there's, listen, it's a lot to live up to, especially for an 18-year-old kid, but, you know, with Jack, I think it's just a matter of time before he really finds his way and really moves on to be that player that everybody wants him to be. He also needs to get the players around him to help out, too. So I think there's something to be said for that as well, too.
Yeah, he definitely needs more competent help around him. So, I mean, because he's
that's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, he's the centerman on that line. He's a pass-first player. So if you don't give him the players that can put the
100%.
Puck in that, you know, it's going to affect his points and his production.
Sure, and him playing with Brad has been an absolute great combination. So I hope to see them continue to do that. I think that there's an opportunity for those two to do really something special. And just that the whole Devils team as a whole, you know, they really the biggest thing is they need to get healthy. I mean, they've been absolutely decimated between COVID and injuries.
Yeah,
and,
well, hopefully that the new guidelines can help them out a bit.
You know, having the taxi squad I think helps them out a little bit too. But man, they've been absolutely getting crushed by COVID, and you know, you saw this happen last year with them to the point where they didn't play for I think 2 weeks, and they were not the same team after that. So I think that there's certainly something to be said for that. And you know, now they haven't played in a week. They'll play again tonight. It'll be interesting to see how they come out of this, because, you know, it affected a lot of, and as it did on other teams, COVID affected the team tremendously last year to where they were not the same team. And you could just tell that they were not up to shape, you know, they were not as in shape as they were, or it was affecting them physically. And on top of not being a great team as it was, they just kind of got left behind. And that's what happens with a lot of these teams that end up getting COVID. It's unfortunate. You know, as somebody who's a diehard Devils fan, I'd like to see them succeed. But I think they're kind of at a point right now where maybe they're going in the right direction, but there's still a few pieces left to be had.
Yeah, I agree.
I think there's some pieces that they need to really take a cold, hard look at, and one of them is Ty Smith. Ty Smith is somebody who, and this is my other problem with what the Devils have done. This is now the second defenseman that you've seen regress in their sophomore year. Looking back at Will Butcher and now Ty Smith. Well, what's going on here? Why are these guys that are supposed to be all-star defensemen now regressing in their sophomore years? What are we doing? Like, what's going on? So there's certainly, for me at least, there's an area of concern there. I don't know that I have the answers to that. Whether it's something that's going on inside the locker room or there's something going on maybe just mentally, I don't know. But there's something's got to change there, and it's definitely one of the pieces that you need to take a long, hard look at for next year and say, is this a part of our future? Which, speaking of young players, I read it too a couple of different ways that Connor McDavid does not seem to be that happy in Edmonton these days. And you know what? When I look back at it, it's hard to blame them. They've had a first round exit. They made it to the second round maybe once in his career there.
Yeah, I think it was against the Ducks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They made it to the second round once in his career there. This is a team that should be in the finals every year.
Got two of the best players in the world.
What are we doing? So I certainly sense the frustration from him there. I don't see him moving anywhere, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on because we know how these stars run this league, or any league really for that matter at this point. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with him because I don't know too many teams are going to be able to take out that contract, let alone have the pieces that they're going to want for him. You saw what happened with Eichel. He forced his way out of Buffalo, which, you know what, it's kind of hard to blame anybody for forcing their way out of Buffalo, but the haul that they got back was tremendous. And you look around the league, and it's hard to say, all right, well, not only that, they're taking on, what, a $13 million a year contract? I don't know. That's something for me that
when it's McDavid, you got to find a way. I mean,
I get it. You know, I could look around the league right now and kind of take a look and see where it would make sense. But I think even having that conversation is something that is too forward at this point. I don't think there's any way that he goes anywhere. I mean, this would be kind of a Gretzky to the Kings type situation all over again. But I think that there's a situation. So there's certainly something there to watch, no question about it. Because if they don't make it past the first round again this year, I think there's going to be some talks there and some hard conversations. Because this team cannot continue to go the way that they're going, and it could. The biggest issue that a lot of times that they've had too is goaltending. They haven't always had that premier goaltender. But then again, you look at teams like the Avalanche, who I compare to the Oilers in a lot of ways, have very similar goaltending, and they're still at least making it to the conference finals every year. And they're still moving forward. So at least they're going in the right direction. And listen, sometimes you know what, you get beat. But I mean the Oilers have not even been competitive in some of these playoffs. And it's quite frankly, it's tough to watch. You know, you see a team that kills it in the regular season, and then just shits the bed in the offseason. And we saw it happen with Tampa too. You know, it happened with Tampa last year or 2 years ago? Three years ago because they won the last two cups. Where they got bounced in the first round. But what happened? They come back and win the next two cups. So. It's definitely getting to that point up at Edmonton where it's time to have some discussions. And I think there's going to be something to be had this offseason, depending on where they end up going. Which also, speaking of Canadian teams.
Before you go, speaking of since we're on the topic of McDavid and the Oilers and unrest, I don't know if you saw it, but I think yesterday Leon Draisaitl got into it a little bit with a reporter.
I did see something about this. I did not have an opportunity to watch it.
I don't remember exactly the questions that were being asked, but, you know, I'm pretty sure he was asking him, like, you know, why is this happening? Why is the team in the state that they're in? And Draisaitl was pretty reluctant to answer, and then
they kept pushing him, right?
Yeah. The reporter was like, "Oh, why are you so pissy?"
It
was a big thing on social media. It was pretty funny to watch. But.
So, I guess what happened was, it looks like they were going back and forth, and it was with Post media writer Jim Matheson. He said to him, "It's not supposed to be an adversarial relationship between the media and the players. I've been doing what I do. I've been doing this a long time. They're going very fair what I do." So, what he was asking him essentially is, why they're not having as much success as they had the last two regular seasons. And Draisaitl gave him the corporate answers, like, yeah, we have to get better at everything. And, when the Matheson asked Draisaitl for his thoughts on what the biggest reason is for the team's recent losses and what one thing is he thinks is most important for the team to improve on. And Draisaitl, again, gave the corporate answer of, we have to get better at everything. Then Matheson asked him to expand on that, and Draisaitl said, "No, you can do that. You know everything." So clearly, Draisaitl was not in a place where he wanted to answer any more of these questions, and kept going from there. Where Matheson decided to ask Draisaitl why he's being so pissy. Draisaitl said that he was simply answering those questions, and Matheson suggested they weren't very good answers. So. when you're having a frustrating off season, when you're having a frustrating regular season, anywhere is tough. In Canada, it's tough times 10, and then in Toronto, it's tough times 1,000. So these reporters are relentless. Listen, there's teams that don't even have beat reporters at this point. To hold the teams accountable. And this guy's job is to hold the team accountable in some respects. So, I understand why he's doing what he's doing, but I think that there's a line, right? I think that, clearly it was clear that Draisaitl didn't want to answer these questions. And if you wanted to continue with it, maybe that wasn't the right time to do it. But I also understand that he's got a job to do. But that is pretty funny to see that Draisaitl got a little testy with him. They've been fair to them all. The media's been fair to them all season, and now it's just kind of starting to hit the fan there. I think that you're going to start to see things maybe unravel a little bit. And that brings me to my last point: Montreal Canadiens. What the hell happened to Montreal? I mean, this team couldn't find its way out of a paper bag at this point. I think they've got 76 goals on the season, and. They just don't even look like themselves. I mean, this is a team that's a year removed from being in the finals.
Well, that's true. I'll give them that. But I'm going to be honest here. That entire cup run was kind of a fluke.
I don't disagree.
It's not – I don't want to say that they didn't have the skill to make it, but it was just – it was a miracle. Like, that team had – really no business in being in the finals against Tampa, but they made their way to the finals, if you understand what I'm saying.
No, I get it. And they probably...
Plus Carey Price. That guy stood on his head the entire
time. Yeah, and, well, it ended up costing him in the long run. That series against Vegas was phenomenal. I thought that was kind of really... It would have been a better Stanley Cup with Vegas in there. What are you going to do? I mean, that's the way that it happens. Seeing two Eastern Conference teams play each other in the finals certainly was a little unique. I think that was definitely something that was a little bit different. It's just like I've watched a lot of their games this year, and they just, it's like night and day with some of the better teams in the league. They didn't seem that unmatched playing in the finals. Were they, you know, was Tampa the better team? Absolutely, no questions asked. But they weren't. It's not like they were. I was gonna say it's not like they were completely outmatched, but in a lot of aspects, maybe they were. But to just fall off the rails like this, and you know, then they fired. Like they just hired a new GM yesterday in Hayes, so we'll see where that goes. And they hired the old Rangers GM Jeff Gordon to be their president of operations. So they're going in the right direction. I think there's a lot of talent there. It'll be interesting to see who they sell at the deadline, because we're quickly getting to that point where we can start talking about who's going to be buyers, who's going to be sellers, and who's going to be selling who. And I think that there's a lot of great conversation to be had. So perfect. I think that's a good spot to kind of maybe start wrapping things up a little bit. We've definitely kind of touched on quite a bit here on the first episode, and
still shaking off the rust.
Yeah, you know, it's been a while. I mean, this is my first time doing a podcast, in case most of you couldn't tell. I know
I certainly haven't done a podcast. Yeah, I'll tell you that.
So it's good to be able to get out there and talk about something that I actually know about and enjoy talking about. Certainly, you know my background, but anybody that has taken the opportunity to listen to this, certainly we thank you. We look to do this every week. It'll be Anthony and I doing the Frozen Biscuit podcasts. You'll be able to download it on iTunes, any of the media outlets, I believe, as well, too. So we certainly thank you, and we look forward to you. We'll be doing this every week, probably every Wednesday we'll do it, and you should see it maybe by Thursday or Friday. So we look forward to talking with you guys every week, and hopefully having maybe some of you guys calling at some point. Thanks again, guys, and enjoy the rest of your day.